B-Pod Studios.
Hey, y'all. Mike Missanelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missanelli show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like the sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly with Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. All competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock ya.
Good afternoon, everybody. Friday, finally, the end of a week. It's going to be cold this weekend, but what are you going to do about it? We got some plenty of stuff to talk about today. And it's the Mike Missanelli Show, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast, 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. I thought today we would do four provocative topics. Now, I'll get to that in a second, because all of them, I think, the fan base is invested in. As far as opinions go, you will all have an opinion on this. And this is what I want to hear today. We're in this week before the Super Bowl type of thing. Phillies haven't signed anybody yet. The Sixers might be in a little peril with the Jimmy Butler thing. The Flyers, well, I don't know what to say about the Flyers. And then there's the Eagles and what they're going to be next year. And they get the draft coming up the whole bit. So this is the way I'll start things off. Because a lot of people freaked out by the Jimmy Butler situation. He's going to miss another game in Denver. And they're going to rest Embiid in Denver also. And Wilson Chandler won't play in Denver. Now, sometimes in the NBA, you have to learn how to lose, right? You've won 3 of 4, pretty big wins. Now you have a game to lose. So this is the sacrificial game. You figure you're not going to win in Denver. We'll rest some players. In the long run, it's beneficial. You got to know how to lose in the NBA. So Jackie McMullen has been covering the NBA for a long time. Boston Globe, I believe she still works for them. And she was on a podcast where she said something about Jimmy Butler that somehow got down this way. And it's freaked some people out as far as what his status is with the organization. Mysterious, the wrist injury that he's been out for a few games now. And we know that there has been some consternation with him with the squad. Now, personally, I don't care about that kind of thing. I kind of don't pay attention to it. I don't look at this as it's going to ruin team harmony. There's always a pain in the ass in the locker room, and the pain in the ass, usually, if he can play, you put up with him. So let's hear what you... Where was this podcast, Tyrone?
It's the Zach Lowe podcast.
ESPN. He covers the league for ESPN. This is the Zach Lowe podcast. Jackie McMullen's on it. Here's what she says when asked about Jimmy Butler.
What do you think of Jimmy Butler? What's your, like, takeaway?
I think he's on thin ice, Zach. I think he's on thin ice. And I think he's a very talented player. And no one's ever called him soft either.
Oh, okay? Hell no.
No. And he, on paper, would be exactly what you would want on a team. Because he's not a selfish player. I would never say that about him. He defends. Boy, does he defend. He gets at it. He makes good decisions on the offensive end of the floor. But this, I don't know him well enough to know, is it real or is it bravado, this whole idea that I'm going to take everybody on, like, you're going to bully me, you're going to call me a bully, I'm going to bully you back, and all this stuff. And I can tell you that having spent a couple days in Philadelphia, you know, they don't love it. And I think you probably, if you read the story, you know there was one Philadelphia person in the organization that said, you know, if you want to get paid, be quiet. You might try that.
Who could that person in the organization have been that said, if you want to get paid, be quiet? Because Jimmy Butler doesn't care about that. He knows he's going to get paid anywhere, right? So I don't know what she's referring to as far as this situation, what's going on, and why he would be trouble, and why he would be on thin ice. The Sixers don't have any choice. Like, thin ice doesn't apply to the Sixers. They need him desperately if they're going to make a move on the rest of the Eastern Conference. So I don't know what thin ice means. Does she mean for the future? Which leads me to question number one for the fan base. Jimmy Butler. Can the Sixers win without him? In other words, if you say this is going to be too much trouble than it's worth, it's time to trade him. We'll move him to another team. Whoever it is, whatever we get back is going to just help us just as much to get through this East Conference powerhouse that we have to get through. And secondly, are they better off without him in the future? So Tyrone, I'll answer you that question first when it comes to this Jimmy Butler. Can they win without him, even if they make a trade and get some people? Can they win?
No, because you're not realistically going to get a piece back that's better than him. So no, they can't win without him. As far as long term, I don't know. Long term's tougher. Because he's missed a lot of games with injury. And he does seem to be a bit of a jerk, it appears. The issue is, a third best player, like, you can control that kind of jerk. Mm-hmm. So who cares if he's a jerk?
Well, let me ask you this, because this is what we don't know. Like, what is this mythological jerkdom that is supposedly following him, other than we know of one thing where he may have challenged his coach in a meeting? Where's the jerkdom coming from that he's been so bad? Like the Allen Iverson thing was jerkdom. He defiantly would not come to practice. He defiantly would call up and say, I'm sick, I can't make it today. He would defiantly say, why do I have to practice? And he still went out and busted your ass. And we didn't care a whit about the other stuff, right?
Right.
So where's the jerkdom come from that is going to prevent the Sixers from winning with Jimmy Butler?
It appears that for whatever reason, as a teammate, he doesn't seem to get along with anybody now. Mm-hmm. And with enough people at three different spots. Chicago, you could say, mm-hmm. bad situation. Minnesota, you could say Wiggins is soft or Towns is soft. Fine, say that. Now you get to a place where we know for a fact the two players he's playing with aren't soft. If he can't get along with these guys at the third stop, at mm-hmm. some point, it's him.
But that's what I think. What is can't getting along mean exactly?
If you think you can't coexist with this player.
But have we seen that?
No, we haven't seen it yet. I don't think so.
So I don't know. Like, when she says he's on thin ice, I don't really know what that means, because the team certainly hasn't imploded with Jimmy Butler on the team. They've actually become a better team. Now, they haven't figured out yet how to best utilize him. I understand that. But I don't see this overall problem. Guys in the NBA are all egotists. You all have to manage them that way. So, like, I don't get the Jimmy Butler thing. But I want to know how people feel about this. The Sixers obviously need more than Jimmy Butler. But if they take Jimmy Butler away, they're done. You know, they're not going to get anybody back that's going to make them as high as the pecking order they're in now. They're in a pecking order. They need to get up in that pecking order. The only way they can do that is to add a couple of bench pieces and make your team fuller, like they did when they added Belinelli and Ilyasova last year, and then they started to ascend. They need that kind of a boost. So I'm curious to know how the Sixer fans feel about him. All right, now that's question one. Question two, we'll turn it to the Phillies. If the Phillies don't get a major dude, are you out as a Philly fan? I mean, you may go to the games because it's a thing to do in the summer, but are you really invested in the fortunes of the Phillies if they don't get one of these guys? Honest question. And you could give me an honest answer and say, yeah, I'm still invested in them because I think they're a pretty good team. Three. Yesterday, I talked about it. I want to know how many people we on board. Changing the whole image of the Philadelphia Flyers. That means hiring new people. That means changing the uniforms. That means changing the old ways that they have operated in operating an arena. All that stuff. Would you, as a Flyer fan, be in favor of that? Or am I the pariah who dare suggest that they change from the good old orange and black? And finally, four, and this is probably the least of our concerns, do you expect the Eagles to be a contender next year with Carson Wentz, or do you suspect that Carson Wentz is a fraud incapable of taking the Eagles to the next level. Four legitimate barroom conversations. Four conversations where one guy can say, you're out of your mind. And the other guy can go, nah, I think it's right. And I don't care which side you're on. I just want to stimulate the conversation today. Picnic table conversation, I call it. All right, here's how you get in. 610-632-0975. Start with the Butler. We'll get out of the Phillies, the Flyers, the Eagles. It's a 4-for-4 day with subject matter. And we're back after this on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philly. Yeah, it's the 4 o'clock hour. And it's brought to us by Landis Block, your one-stop shop for jaw-dropping outdoor paradise online at LandisBC.com. And they also bring us our regular Friday guest on Football Friday, but we have to wait a week for football. He joins us from 4 to 5 every Friday, brought to us by Landis Block. He is Brian Westbrook. Mr. Westbrook.
Michael, how are you, my friend?
So I'm reading the paper today, and I'm seeing this big story where B. West is involved in some kind of big-time corporation gambling situation here. It's like a company of some sort. Tell me about it, because I wasn't invited to any of your big-wig parties.
Yeah, I got something to tell you about in a minute. I'll tell you about this deal, though. Right. This is called 76 Capital. Mm-hmm. Ryan Howard is involved. John Powell's involved. I think his family did the whole King of Prussia deal out there. Wayne Kimmel's involved. But basically, we go around and we invest in sports tech startup companies. So a lot of startup companies. They're tracking the football, the velocity on the football. They're tracking shots for basketball, all different types of things. We also have big investors in VSiN, which is a Vegas sports betting company. They basically are the CNBC of sports betting.
Wow.
So that's pretty awesome as well. So, yeah, a couple different companies that, just trying to keep things moving and shaking over here in the Westbrook household.
Yeah, I see this. Westbrook likes Super Bowl estimates is the headline of the big story here.
Yeah, so listen, it's eight states have betting are allowed in eight states.
Mm-hmm.
They're estimating $300 million will be bet in those eight states on the Super Bowl, which is crazy. Crazy.
How long have I known Brian Westbrook, Tyra? A long time, right?
A long time, yeah.
You think maybe in all the time we hung out, he said, he would, Mike, would you like to throw a few shekels our way? Just a big venture get involved in this?
I got a little something. I got a little deal. I got a deal for you. I just want to get my feet wet first.
I got to
get my feet wet first, and then, then I can bring you in.
Okay.
That's how this deal works.
I got you, because you've been, for 5 years hammering me about this party that you didn't go to.
Yeah.
At my place.
I have been.
What did I tweet out? I have ordered a big Brian Westbrook fathead, and I'm going to stick it on my garage and deface my property just so you'll feel good when you come in.
Well, what you should be thinking about is this. That your friend in there, Tyrone, has that nice Penn State jersey on.
How about that?
I'm shocked you bought him a present, actually.
Well, and I haven't received
the present from you yet. My closet is bare. I don't have a Mike Missanelli Penn State.
Wait a minute. Would you wear
hockey jersey?
Would a Villanova man like you wear something Penn State?
If you gave it to me, I would at least consider it.
You're in, brother. I'm going to get you a Saquon Barkley throwback.
Tyrone's in there wearing his Christmas presents around, showing off. And here I am, in a Westbrook hoodie.
Well, you're going to wear Saquon. I'm giving you a Saquon. That cinches it.
Okay.
All right, man. Let's listen. It's between football situations here, but your early look at this Super Bowl with Brady, I'm looking at his postseason and the numbers of postseason. They're just mind boggling. It was ninth Super Bowl. It's like old hat to this guy. He's got to have the advantage in a game like this, right?
Oh, I would think he does. And when you talk about talent, I think you look at the talent on both sides of the football. You're talking about the Patriots as well as the Rams. I think the talent leans towards the Rams. But I've been in these games back in 2004, 2005. When we played in the Super Bowl, I understand how much that experience and playing in this game before, and how, you know, Tom Brady's been there almost, what, 10 times now? I mean, something crazy.
This is nine
doggone Super Bowl. So that experience plays a big part in this game. And, you know, last week I thought that Jared Goff would fold, and he didn't. And I think he stood up and played well in that game. I think even with that, even with, you know, the different things that they bring on the defensive side of the ball, that experience of the New England Patriots not making mistakes in the biggest game of the season will play a big part in winning this football game for them.
All right, let's look at the Eagles now, where they stand, because it's summer mode. We have no idea what they're going to do next year. We have no idea who they're going to draft. But what we do know is that the quarterback is the quarterback, okay? Yeah, and I sense... and I know you sense a little bit of people have been very forgetful about this guy's ability for a couple reasons. Number one, because of the injury things. But number two, because Foles came along and kind of blew away any accomplishments that Wentz has ever had here. Nobody even talks about his accomplishments. It's all about Foles did this, Foles did this, Foles did this. Wentz didn't do anything. You sense that in the fan base?
Absolutely. But, I mean, you're right, because he hasn't been healthy in a year. So, obviously, he wasn't healthy this year. And the year before, when we went to the Super Bowl, before he got injured, mm-hmm. I mean, he threw a lot of touchdowns. I mean, there's just a lot of throws that he was able to make with his legs and things like that. I think what we've seen here is Nick Foles playing a different style of football. He seems to do different things here offensively for us. And that's just not Carson Wentz like when he's not healthy. But when Carson is healthy, he's special. And I think, of course, that the fans and some analysts and some people inside of that locker room are all about, what have you done for me lately? And I think when you talk about what Nick Foles has done for them lately, it's much better than what Carson Wentz and injured Carson Wentz has done for this football team.
All right, what do you think that does to Carson Wentz now in the offseason and coming back, either you know, mostly mentally?
Well, I think if Carson is a competitor that everyone has said he has been, that when Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas were selling this Carson Wentz, when if he's that type of competitor, this lights a fire underneath him. This puts him in a situation that he says, I have to go out there and be successful. That means this offseason is an opportunity for me to make that big type of jump, that jump that says I'm the best player on the football field and everybody needs to know it. Not the Carson Wentz that came back this year that still seemed to be a little gimpy, still wasn't 100% confident in his abilities. We need that 2017 type of Carson Wentz, that guy that's going out there and winning those football games. If that guy comes back and that starts in the offseason, that's why his mindset has to be totally different. That's what I would think he would be.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, do you sense that this could be one of these situations where he overly presses to make up for what has transpired here, not only with Foles, but, you know, for past games where he didn't play, that he'll have a more of a sense of urgency that can actually mess him up?
Well, I think he will have a sense of urgency. He wants to go out there and be successful. He wants to go out there and prove to his team that he is that guy that was there a couple years ago. So there will be a sense of urgency. Now, if it's the coach's job, it's the guys around him's job to make sure that that sense of urgency doesn't overwhelm him, doesn't put him in a situation where he's hurting the team instead of helping the team. And that's what training camp, that's what all the offseason programs are there for. So he can continue to prove that he's ready, he's able to go, and the coaches can pull him back if needed. That's what the coaches, that's their job. That's their whole purpose in being there. And if they allow, you know, him to press his way through, then he certainly will make some mistakes. But that's their job, to bring them in just a little bit there.
Okay. The story a couple days ago, I know you're well aware of it. It pops out in a venue called the Philly Voice, mm-hmm. where it paints him out to be kind of a selfish lout of a guy. Like something that we haven't heard about Carson Wentz before, with indicating that a lot of players think he's a prima donna, blah, 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 blah. First of all, what did you make of the story, and how does a story like that come about?
Well, I think when you have, you know, 53 guys or however many guys they have on the team at this point, you know, in a locker room, not everyone's going to like everyone. We didn't have, you know, 53 guys in our locker room that loved Donovan McNabb. And that would say great things about Donovan McNabb. Now, Donovan was one of my best friends, and I enjoyed being around Donovan. But there were other guys that didn't feel that way. And that's understandable, and that happens in every locker room. Every single locker room that you walk in, I guarantee you go up to New England, same type of thing for Tom Brady. But I think when you have a different quarterback being successful there, now guys feel a little bit more able to go and speak these things to Carson Wentz because he's struggling a little bit, and there are times this season where he just didn't look like himself. And so if guys are seeing another quarterback being more successful doing different things, I think they're just going to try to help him along and give him that type of information. The one thing about the entire story, and I didn't mind the ego. I didn't mind the pushbacking, you know, pushing coaches back just a little bit as far as what they thought, because that happens with some of the best quarterbacks in this league. So that's no different from them. The only part that I was a little bit worried about was when he said that a veteran came to him and Carson just kind of blew him off, just didn't want to hear from him.
Yes.
That's the only part of the story that gave me a little bit of pause. But everything else, I'm not concerned about that. When he goes out and wins game, all those types of attributes would be part of his success story. That would be a part of the things that drive him to make him the best quarterback in the league if he's successful. The pushback to the veteran, that's the part that worried me just a bit.
And I know where you're going. I'll read the couple paragraphs I think are pertinent on this point. Numerous sources confirm Wentz was once verbally attacked by a highly respected teammate for not being a team guy. And then there's this quote from this anonymous source. I don't know if it's the same one. It's Carson Wentz's biggest enemy is Carson Wentz. He's had his ass kissed his whole life, and sometimes he acts like he's won 10 Super Bowls when he hasn't played in, let alone won a playoff game yet. Everyone around him wants good things for him. He did more thinking on the field than he did playing. You don't have to be a brain surgeon or a football expert to see how differently this team plays and reacts with one guy as opposed to the other. Now, Brian, I know that this indicates that there is a problem in the locker room. But you have to measure whether it's like a majority of people that feel that way or just a couple disgruntled players. So what do other players make of this?
Well, I don't think that it's I think if you're going to the quarterback and saying some of the things that were mentioned in the article, it's not because you hate the guy. It's not because, you wish the guy any will. It's because you want the guy to be better. And now when you talk about selfish, he don't even think about himself. Again, those are not the most positive things to say about a guy. But again, some of the best quarterbacks in the league, some of the best players are the exact same way. I just wonder, I don't think it's a majority of the locker room. I think there may be some people in that locker room, and it happens all across football all the time. And it generally doesn't come up unless you lose the last game of your season and you can't extend to win the Super Bowl. That generally doesn't come up unless that type of thing happens. And so this is not one of the things that doesn't happen on other teams. That happens all the time across the NFL.
All right. When you were playing, mm-hmm. We know about the T.O. thing, but were there other direct things said to McNabb along these lines? And it just was like, well, this is what happens, and you move on to the next day.
There wasn't. There just wasn't a lot of questioning his ability, questioning his decision-making. There just wasn't throughout his career. And I think for Andy Reid and the way that he built his system, I think that was for a reason. He built it that way so that the guy, which is Donovan, and quarterbacks, again, had they're temperamental sometimes. They put themselves in as far as a mental battle at times. And so I think coaches try to do the best job as they can to not put them in situations where they're challenged. You know, they want them to be successful and be confident heading into a football game. And I think that's by plan. That's by design by some head coaches.
All right. So overall, with this story out here, what does it mean to you as far as how it affects the team? Nothing, a little, a lot.
Well, I don't think it affects the team in a big way. I think this should put Carson on notice just a bit. And maybe, and hopefully, if he's a guy, the smart player that I think everyone believes he is, he'll take notice of this. Because this team has to be better. It's going to be carried on his back. He also should take notice of the fact that this team operated much better with a different type of quarterback who's less skilled than him. So maybe he can sharpen up on some of those other type of skills and make him a better quarterback, make him a better team player, and help this team be more successful. I that's the one thing that I would suggest to Carson, especially after hearing some of the things that at least these couple players in this article mentioned.
Tyrone would like to ask you a question. Go ahead, Ty.
Now, you saw how the season ended, Brian. He didn't play that well against the Bears, but he had the drive at the end, but he threw two picks. He didn't play well at all after the second drive in the Saints game.
Yep.
Would Carson have some anger at the teammates when he sees that at the end of the day, Foles wasn't good enough while they were all rallying behind him. He didn't play well in the last two games, yet you're attacking me. Would he feel a little anger towards those teammates?
Well, this is me talking. I have no clue what Carson feels at this point, but I don't think that he would feel that way. Why would he? I think Carson is, Carson is in a perfect situation. He has an opportunity to get healthy this offseason, which I think he'll be completely able to do that. He has an opportunity to become better, and he has the guys around him already built in. He has an opportunity to go out there and just be the best quarterback that he can be. No, and Nick Foles won't be in the picture. This is a great situation for him. So as far as competing with anybody else, that's not going to happen. Carson, you're the man. Now you have to go out there and perfect your game and get better. This is a great opportunity for him. I don't think anybody in the locker room, or he should feel any way about the guys in the locker room. If I'm Carson Wentz, I'm taking into consideration everything that's happened, everything that I've seen, and now I have to go out there and be the best quarterback that I can be. It, to me, it's very, very simple.
Brian, I don't know if any of this stuff was said. You know, I mean, who knows what was said here? This is a story that has a lot of anonymous sources. If there were things said, as a former player, what would be the motivation for certain players to whisper down the lane at a reporter these kind of things?
The motivation. So, I mean, I guess let's say if I'm the guy that went to Carson and said, hey, man, you need to, you know, potentially do things a little bit differently. And I'm yelling at him, things like that. And Carson just blows me off, doesn't listen to me. At that point, I think I'm probably still a little bitter. But I also want to put him on notice that maybe he's not the guy that, you know, everyone else thinks he is. Let me tell you what he did to me. And I don't want to say his get back, but it certainly seems like that. It seems like this is his opportunity to kind of get back at Carson just a bit. But again, there may be 100 different motives out there for these types of things. It could be 100 different things. I just think that, you know, there are times where players want to put the public on notice of the guy mm-hmm. that they're all praising. And I'm not sure about in this situation, but that has happened in the past.
This is something that you never did. People had to pull words out of your mouth when you were a player, which I find very interesting because you're really articulate and engaging now, you know, when we do these kind of things. And you stayed away from all of that. It was like people had to find you to get a quote. Right. I'm curious to know why you decided to play your career that way. Was it a mistrust of the press or what was it exactly?
You know, it's weird because there was a couple times, and I believed Andy Reid. I was one of these guys. I came in, I drank the Kool-Aid. I had faith in his ability as a coach. And, you know, Andy's, the way that he went about the media was like, listen, the guys in this room can help us win. Anyone outside, media, anything or anything that's outside of this room, these 53 guys, this room of coaches outside of this building, they can't do anything to help us. All they can do is hurt us. And so when it came to the media, and there was a couple situations early on in my career where we kind of felt, as far as the players, that the media was trying to divide us as a team. And so for me, I was like, well, listen, I don't want to be a part of that. I only want to do things that can help this team win. And so I always kind of felt, if you watch the game, if you watch what I'm doing on the field, then my play should speak for itself. And that's the kind of way that I've always approached it. And, you know, a lot of different guys had the ability to, you know, go out and talk trash. And that just wasn't me.
Well, how did you? It's funny because you almost used to run the other way. When you would see people line up at your locker, would you, like, try to avoid them?
I wouldn't try to avoid them. But, there was always other things that I needed to do besides, talk to the media at that point. Mm. It wasn't on my to-do list. I always felt like my talking is always done on the football field. And if you wanted to see what I'm doing and ask questions about that, then all you have to do is watch the tape. That's it.
I got you. All right. Now, today, and I want to get you involved in this discussion. We'll go to the phones as well. I'm discussing four different topics. But the one topic that involves the Sixers is this Jimmy Butler topic now. Mm-hmm. Now, Todd, we have that. I want Brian to hear this Jackie McMullen thing. Jackie McMullen covered the NBA for a lot of years, and she was on a podcast. And she was talking about Jimmy Butler and like the behind-the-scenes relationship that may be poisoning a little bit. Here's what she had to say about him.
What do you think of Jimmy Butler? What's your, takeaway
I think he's on thin ice, Zach. I think he's on thin ice. And I think he's a very talented player. And no one's ever called him soft either.
Oh, okay? Hell no.
No. And he, on paper, would be exactly what you would want on a team. Because he's not a selfish player. I would never say that about him. He defends. Boy, does he defend. He gets at it. He makes good decisions on the offensive end of the floor. But this, I don't know if it's, I don't know him well enough to know, is it real or is it bravado, this whole idea that I'm going to take everybody on, like, you're going to bully me, you're going to call me a bully, I'm going to bully you back, and all this stuff. And I can tell you that having spent a couple days in Philadelphia, you know, they don't love it. And I think you probably, if you read the story, you know there was one Philadelphia person in the organization person. That said, you know, if you want to get paid, be quiet. You might try that.
All right, so I mean, everything was hunky-dory and they got him, and now all of a sudden these little things are coming out. So I got to ask you this. Can they win without him? Or would the Sixers, like she says that he's on thin ice, would the Sixers actually have the audacity to move him in at this particular time of the year? And would you do that, or would you handle it a different way?
Well, it's interesting because your first question was, can they win, you know, without him? I have a serious question if they can win it all with him. You know what I'm saying? I think they need him plus more. And so
I agree with that. But
they cannot. They don't have enough scoring to win without him.
But if they've made a trade for him and got some guys, what I'm saying is he a detriment to winning, or do you have to cultivate a player like that?
I think you find a way to make it work. And I was in a situation, you know, similar, and I don't know the whole details of the Jimmy Butler situation, but T.O., again, you have to find a way to make that type of player work in your system, because getting rid of him, it just costs your team way too much and sets your team back. And it may take two or three different guys to fill that role, and that's cool, but you need that other guy. You need at least three guys on a team, you know, to even be close to making it to the championship in that league.
You have to
have Jimmy Butler.
I absolutely agree with you. Make it work, and I was saying it when you had T.O. as well. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll take your phone calls. Two open lines. You can grab a line with Brian Westbrook. 610-622-0975. We're back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.